Tuesday's election results provided surprises for many people. And while there has been a lot of focus through the campaign and the election on the presidential race, there have been some very important races and issues in the Commonwealth of Kentucky. For example, that for one of our two U.S. Senate seats.
While there is much that divides us, there is also a uniquely American hope for the future that unites us.
And let's make Lexington and Kentucky even better places to live, to work, to start a business, and raise a family.
On this week's Eastern Standard, a post-election reporters roundtable. We're interested in hearing from you with your questions, comments, observations, or personal stories. Write to us by email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Post your comment to the WEKU Facebook page or send a tweet at WEKUEST. In just a few minutes, we'll open the phones as well. It's time for Eastern Standard, right after the latest news from NPR. From the studios of WEKU on the campus of Eastern Kentucky University, this is Eastern Standard. Hello, I'm John Hingsbergen. A few weeks ago, we had a panel of reporters giving us a preview of this year's election and hearing listener comments and questions about the upcoming election. The election is now behind us, and this week we've invited our reporters to join us once again for a roundtable. This week, a post-election reporters roundtable. And of course, our program is an interactive show. I'll give you information about how you can contact us in just a moment as I first introduce two guests who are here at the moment, and we're going to welcome another in a moment. Ryland Barton is Capital Bureau Chief for Kentucky Public Radio, and Ryland has been with us a number of times. Ryland, you've been on this beat, what now, 2 years?
Yep, about 2 years now.
Well,
moved back to Kentucky in January of 2015.
Tell me again where you had been.
I was in Texas, most recently Waco.
And
before that, Austin, but grew up in Lexington.
Came back to Kentucky just in time for interesting times.
Just in time. Seen quite a transition over the years.
We're going to get Ryland Barton's perspective on this election as we progress with today's Eastern Standard. We also welcome back to the studio Ronnie Ellis, who is a Capitol Bureau correspondent. I'm getting confused here. I'm thinking you're the guy covering Frankfurt for CNHI News, including the Richmond Register.
Yes.
Ronnie, been doing this how long again?
In this particular job, about 12 years, I think.
And again, an interesting time to be doing this job. We hope to welcome Dan DeRocher, political reporter for the Lexington Herald Leader, and we hope to invite you to be part of the program. It is an interactive show. You're invited to send us an email to wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Send us a tweet at WEKUEST. Post on the WEKU website or Facebook page or pick up the phone and call. And we're interested in your questions for the reporters, your comments, your personal stories about this election. And I will say right up front, we're not going to spend much time talking about the presidential race. So that is behind us. And we want to talk about Kentucky. We want to talk about the very, very important issues and the races that are actually, primarily it's races that were on the ballot that will lead to issues for the Commonwealth of Kentucky. 800-621-8890. That's 800-621-8890. And after all that introductory stuff, let's just jump right in, guys. Were there any surprises, Ryland?
I think at the top of the ticket, I know you don't want to talk too much about presidential races, but I think something that not a lot of people were expecting, because weren't talking about it in the news too much, was that Hillary Clinton ended up losing some big Rust Belt states. Turnout for her wasn't as high as expected, and Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, Wisconsin all went the way of Donald Trump. And, you know, we just saw a shift in some voting patterns there in, previously, areas that had voted for Democrats went Republican this time around.
I assume you and I assume everyone around the table expected Kentucky to go for Trump.
That's certainly we've seen that all year. I think at first Democrats were hopeful that Hillary Clinton would come back to Kentucky, build on the reputation. Bill Clinton in the mid-90s was relatively popular here. He carried the state in in both times he ran for president here, but she really didn't have the same popularity in the state, and yeah, we definitely saw that, and I think that Donald Trump had some pretty long coattails here, carried the down ballot, especially down in the state house races.
Ronnie Ellis, again, covering the state government for the Commonwealth of Kentucky for 12 years. Any surprises?
Well, yeah, I was not surprised how well Trump did in Kentucky. That was apparent pretty early on. I was surprised at the national outcome and his ability to break down what's used to be known as the Democratic blue wall across the Midwest. I was not surprised, and I doubt that either of our colleagues here were surprised about the Republicans taking over the House in Kentucky, but I was very surprised by the number by which they overtook the
it
House.
It came in as a 2-1, wasn't it, like 65 to 35?
Yeah, well, 64 to 36 now. Okay. They picked up, they unseated 17 Democrats and won six seats. Well, actually, I guess it was 18, and then they netted out at 17 because they lost an incumbent seat as well. And then some of the people that went down in that avalanche. The Speaker of the House, Greg Stumbo, was beaten. There were indications leading up to the election that he was in trouble. I was surprised but not shocked by it. I was watching that race. But you had committee chairs, multiple committee chairs go down. You had people who previously were thought very secure in their seats and in their districts to get beat, and so I was surprised by that.
Without getting too local, of the 81st District, Rita Smart?
That was one of them I didn't see coming, but there were several, and it was, I expected it in Eastern Kentucky because of the Hillary Clinton anathema for the coal economy and culture over there. I did not expect it in some other places that it occurred, including in the 81st.
Dan DeRocher, your first time on Eastern Standard. Thank you for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Any surprises Tuesday night?
I'm with Ronnie on both of those surprises. I mean, I kind of had a feeling that the Republicans were going to take the state house, but I didn't think that it was going to be by that wide of a margin. And I think that surprised a lot of folks. And then I was also surprised by the presidential election. I thought for sure, we knew Kentucky was going to go for Trump, but I thought for sure that some of those states would hold up for Clinton that just didn't end up holding up for her.
We intend to talk about the impact of the election on Kentucky on this week's show. Again, our phone number, 800-621-8890, with your questions, your comments, your personal stories or observations. One of the other major issues that was on everyone's ballot in the Commonwealth of Kentucky was the U.S. Senate race. And so we're going to move there. First up, I just want to hear a little bit of sound of the victor, followed by the challenger.
I think our best days are still ahead. I see an America strong enough to deter foreign aggression, yet wise enough to avoid unnecessary intervention. Yeah. I see an America where criminal justice is applied equally, where people of color are not unfairly incarcerated. Yeah. I see an America with a restrained IRS that cannot target and harass American citizens for their political or their religious beliefs.
You know, these things are ebbs and flows in politics. And what we see going one way for a little while, it moves in another direction a little bit later. And that's the way our country, but that represents the strength of democracy. We have to think about it that way. We ran a great race. We were competitive. Nobody really gave us this kind of a shot early on, and it was uphill all the way. It was uphill here even at the end, but we had some momentum going into the end, into the stretch.
Lexington Mayor Jim Gray was unable to unseat Senator Rand Paul. I'm interested from our reporters around the table here at WEKU, your view of how that race went. Did Jim Gray perform better than expected?
He didn't perform as well as he would have liked.
obviously, yeah. He's going back to work at City Hall.
Yes. I think that he performed probably as well as he could in an election where Donald Trump was running for president. Donald Trump had a lot of support in Kentucky, and Jim Gray had to overcome that, and he just wasn't able to. He had challenges with name recognition. He was running against a guy who ran for president and is widely known not only in Kentucky but in the country. And he was, the biggest factor is he was working against that Trump movement, and he was working against a state that is really becoming a Republican state and a red state, and it's going to be tough for any Democrat on a national level from here on out.
And the final results of that race were something like 57 to 43?
Yeah, 14 points, if I remember right. And I think one of the big takeaways, something that we were wondering with that race the whole time, is would Jim Gray ever be able to get, you know, name ID and any sort of popularity or build any sort of coalition out in the state? His response to that was always, well, I'm originally from Glasgow, and you know, people are going to be able to listen, are going to listen to me on my record. But if you look at the map of Kentucky, I mean, Jim Gray only got Fayette County and Jefferson County in the whole map of Kentucky. And it's just, I think that's kind of what it comes down to. He was working off a pretty much exclusively urban coalition. And that's kind of the lesson for Democrats here is they're not going to be able to win statewide races in Kentucky if they're just getting votes in Jefferson County and Fayette County.
Well, you know, I should probably state something, a full disclosure. I went to high school with Jim Gray. I knew the Gray family. My uncle worked for the construction company and idolized his mother, Lois Gray, and his older brother, Howard. Jim does have rural, small-town roots, and in many ways, he is the sort of Democrat that we've heard in past years that Kentuckians were looking for. But I think he did suffer from the image of a big city mayor. We've seen in the presidential election, I think in the House elections, and last year's gubernatorial election, we're seeing increasingly the divide become rural and urban. And Jim was unable to overcome that. As Dan said, it was a tough environment for him to run in. I think he ran a pretty good campaign. And I don't think he had, I'm careful how I say this, I guess, but he didn't have real veteran, top-notch national talent running that campaign. And yet, I thought the strategy was good. I thought the messaging was good. He couldn't overcome those factors and those coattails, but I think he was unable to get that message out that he does have a background in business and so forth. There's one other aspect that we ought to talk about, and that is that he is openly gay, which not only is a tough thing to do running for office in Kentucky, but Jim Gray, I thought, was fairly good at keeping that from being a dominating issue. Yet I don't think people realize that it was a motivating issue.
Did it come up at all?
I actually had an experience where it did come up because I went out to Eastern Kentucky and I was just trying to talk to voters. And they were all willing to talk about how much they loved Donald Trump because he was a business leader.
Dan, I'm going to ask you to hold on that because our listeners will want to hear that story. We're going to take a short break. Dan DeRocher, the Lexington Herald Leader, is here with us. Ronnie Ellis of CNHI News. Rylan Barton, Capital Bureau Chief for Kentucky Public Radio. If you're on the line, please be patient with us. We will get to our listeners at some point, and we encourage you to get on the line. I think there's at least one open. 800-621-8890. Send a tweet at WEKU EST. It's Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. I'm John Hingsbergen with a reporter's roundtable, our post-election roundtable. Rylan Barton is with us, Dan DeRocher is with us, and Ronnie Ellis. And we're inviting you to be part of the conversation, hopefully specific questions for the reporters on these campaigns. Or if you want to talk about something very specific, please focus in on Kentucky issues if you want to express an opinion today. The presidential race behind us, we kind of knew where Kentucky was going to go in that race, and that came down exactly as expected. And that's kind of where we stand. We want to talk about the impact of this election going forward in our lives. And Dan DeRocher, you said that we were talking about the Senate race. Rand Paul, again, successful, being reelected. This is his second term, I guess, as senator representing the Commonwealth. And of the issue of Jim Gray being openly gay. And Jim, in his concession speech and in other remarks and speaking with our Stu Johnson, spoke about the fact that he felt very welcomed and treated very fairly by Kentuckians overall. But you observed an incident.
So yeah, I mean, I think that overall he was definitely treated welcome. Like he was welcomed. But national media came in and they portrayed this idea that Jim Gray was running for senator, and it didn't matter that he was gay. And that didn't really sit right with me in a state where Governor Bevin campaigned supporting Kim Davis, who refused to issue marriage licenses to gay couples. And so I did go out to Eastern Kentucky and tried to talk to people about it. And they were very willing to talk about how much they liked Donald Trump because he was a business leader. And then when I asked the follow-up, okay, Jim Gray is also a business leader, do you like that about him too? They're very wary about it. And they're like, well, I'm not sure I like where he stands on social issues. I actually got one guy in a barber shop in Breathitt County to openly say that he thought that there were a lot of people who, one, knew that Jim Gray was gay, and two, were going to go to polls with that in mind, and that might be the single issue that they vote on election day. So if you looked at Facebook, there were always people commenting and mentioning that Jim Gray was gay. If you looked at Twitter, there was some stuff there too. It didn't necessarily prevent him from winning, but it definitely was it was in the background of this race.
And were there any public expressions of that? Any public? I don't know how to say that. Groups speaking out or trying to raise an
there
issue.
There really weren't very much. Wasn't much of that. He went out of his way not to make it an issue, but I think we probably need to be candid. Had the race been closer, we probably would have seen some things now. Might have been, what in the inside baseball is called dog whistle. It may have not been an outright comment, but there would have been imagery. The point I wanted to try to make, however, is that there was a point in the campaign where I interviewed him. And Jim Gray is a very interesting fellow. He's a very interesting intellectually. He's a thoughtful sort of guy. And after the close of the interview, he looked at me and said, can I say something off the record? And I said, sure. And he said, I understand the historical significance of what I'm doing. And in his concession speech, that came out. And he talked about the young college student who came up and embraced him and said, thank you, because I'm gay too. I think that was important to Jim Gray. I thought he ran a graceful and professional campaign. He was running in a tough state at a tough set time and probably never had any chance of winning that race.
The House races, the U.S. House, 6 districts in the Commonwealth of Kentucky, where we had a couple that were uncontested, I guess. 6th district representing Central Kentucky, where we had a challenger, Nancy Jo Kemper, taking on Andy Barr. Any surprises in the results of that race?
No, yeah. Not at all. Andy Barr ran away with that race. Kind of following the game plan of a lot of incumbent Republicans in the state, which is just, just kind of try to run on your record. He didn't participate in any debates until the KET debate towards the end of the campaign. And he raised a whole lot of money for that and it just kind of maintained his coalition and his support going forward. Nancy Jo Kemper, she really tried to find an issue to run with in that campaign. She called for Governor Bevin to be impeached at one point. That was probably the most publicity she got over the course of her campaign. But I don't think she was ever able to really get the notoriety that she wanted.
Did she advance any of her issues?
Well, again, I think she did among those who listened or who saw her. But I don't think that was a real large portion of the population. You know, I think that district, and this is not a comment on either Nancy Jo Kemper or Elizabeth Jensen, who ran 2 years ago. They both are very thoughtful, bright people with a lot of interesting ideas. But that is as close to a swing district as there is in this state. And the Democratic Party has not fielded a high-profile, well-financed candidate, especially 2 years ago when Mr. Barr was a first-term incumbent, and that's when they're most likely to be able to be defeated. And I doubt now, at this point, it's going to be very hard to take him out of that office, even if you come up with a really good candidate.
Dan, any comments on the 6th district race?
No, we kind of saw what we expected there. Andy Barr was way ahead, and he really made it a point to stay ahead. I mean, he went out with the ads. He was not taking that race for granted, and he wanted to make a point, and he wanted to win as big as he did. And, I mean, that message got through, and he took the victory.
Before we speak with any of our listeners, let's move to General Assembly. That is going to be an all-Republican General Assembly with a Republican governor this year. But let me remind our listeners, if you do have a question, a comment you would like to make during the show, you're welcome to get on the line at 800-621-8890. Send us an email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Send a tweet at wekuest. Okay, so a little bit of surprise at the extent to which Republicans managed to flip the House, which is something they've been trying to do for at least the last couple of years. What are your observations? Our reporters around the table here, what does this mean for this upcoming session of the General Assembly?
Well, I think that what we're all trying to figure out right now is what the the new, with a supermajority in the House of Representatives and having the state Senate has a supermajority as well, and Republican Governor Bevin as well. What kind of issues are Republicans going to be pushing in the upcoming legislative session? I think the big one everybody's wondering about is right to work, which would forbid companies from requiring workers to pay union dues. There's some question as to whether, even with a supermajority, whether or not Republicans can stay united on that issue. There still are some, sort of pro-union Republicans who oppose that issue. But then going down the ticket, kind of tort reform and then, of course, some of these kind of social issues like, whether they would make it more or put increased restrictions on abortions. Trying to pass a religious freedom bill or a transgender bathroom bill, which the Republican state Senate passed last year. We don't have a clear understanding of it yet, but we're, over the coming months and weeks and days, we're trying to figure that out.
I agree with everything Ryland said. There are some complications. Sometimes I'm fascinated by the inside baseball stuff. In some ways, the Republican majority task and the presumptive new speaker, Jeff Hoover's task, was actually complicated by the size of their victory. As Ryland correctly pointed out, there were members of the previous existing caucus from parts of the state that are not big on right to work. I'm not sure that they could have passed right to work just among their 47 members under the old caucus. But you have 23 new members, many of whom, if not most of whom, ran on those issues. They can't come up here and come to Frankfort and drop those. So that'll have to be worked out. The other big item that Ryland didn't mention is tax reform. Governor Bevin wants it. The state needs it. Everybody in both parties for the last 15 years has talked about it. It's a matter of political courage to pass it, what form it will take, and does it bring in more money? Now, what they have done in the past under both Republicans and Democrats is to pass something euphemistically, in my opinion, called revenue neutral, which was revenue neutral for all of 60 seconds after it passed. It was designed to raise more money. I don't think that's what Governor Bevin is planning to do. I think Governor Bevin recognizes the need, the state's need for more revenue, and is going to ask for it. Now, perhaps doing it through sales taxes, closing loopholes, so forth and so on. But that may run into some resistance in the Republican legislature.
Anything that increases the revenue.
Yeah, the Senate President,
tax increase.
Senate President Robert Stivers yesterday said, whatever passes, and again, and he gets an, I think he's done a really good job as Senate President. He gets annoyed with me when I do this, but it's another euphemism. I'm sorry, when he says that no individual will face any more tax exposure. If you're going to raise more revenue over time, somebody's paying more taxes. But they don't want to frame it that way. And I'm not sure how easily Governor Bevin, the Senate, and the House can all agree on the details of tax reform.
Dan DeRosier.
Yeah, so I think that this is going to be really interesting. I mean, this is something that the Republicans have pushed for a really long time, and now they finally have it. They have control of all three branches in Frankfurt. And I think it'll be fascinating to see the flurry of bills that come forward. Rylan mentioned a bunch of them that we're probably going to see, and I think that there might even be some surprises. There are organizations. I know the Chamber of Commerce is talking with the House leadership now, and I know that the Family Foundation of Kentucky is compiling lists of some kinds of legislation that have passed through conservative legislatures in other states. And so I think we're going to see some bills that we've seen pass the Senate before, and we're going to see some new bills, and it's going to be really interesting to see what this new majority does.
The Kentucky House was the last remaining Southern legislative body under control of Democrats, still is for a few weeks. What does this flip mean going forward? Is it going to stay that way? Will we have Republican control? And I know this is asking your opinion, but is it likely to stay Republican on both sides of the Capitol going forward?
I mean, this is kind of the dark night of the soul for Kentucky Democrats. And I think they're trying to figure out, you know, how do they come back from this? You know, they're not dead. They're still, you know, in the House. There's still 36 House Democrats, and so, you know, and beyond, there's still a majority of Democrats registered across the state. You know, in the past, Democrats have run on this kind of socially conservative platform. In a lot of ways, end up kind of looking a lot like Republicans, and that's been a bit of their solution to, you know, this, as we were talking about before, you know, trying to win in places outside of just Lexington and Louisville, and so they're in a little bit of a fix right now, and I think that what they're waiting for is an issue to run on, something that everybody's been kind of waiting to see. You know, if Democrats will rally around is the governor's policies, you know, scaling back the expanded Medicaid program and scrapping the state healthcare exchange, and you know, that's something we haven't really seen trickle down the ballot too much. It hasn't drawn a whole lot of ire on part of Democrats, and you know, it's certainly something that the governor campaigned on during the race for governor last year. And I think that's kind of we're kind of waiting to see what issue they're going to try to take hold of and how, you know, whether or not they'll be able to build on that.
I think the Republican hegemony is probably set for a long, long time. Now, as we saw Tuesday, things happen that we don't see coming, that we weren't able to control. And miracles happen, but they don't happen every day. I think about the only way the Republicans lose control of this state for the as far as I can see, is if they do it to themselves. They will more than likely, and I think before the next census, they will move to redistrict the state legislatively. Now, people don't realize that can be done other than on the 10-year cycle. There will probably be some fights about it. But once, if they are successful in doing that, the Democrats will lose a lot of seats in even urban areas in Louisville. On top of that, the Democratic Party has been moribund for a long time. It has succeeded by where it has succeeded in, inside the state through poor gubernatorial candidates, good luck, and sometimes the personalities of their candidates, a Steve Beshear. They don't have the governor's mansion. They can't raise money like they did before. I think things look rather bleak for Democrats, and I think Democrats have got to figure out how to be Democrats rather than be Republican light if they want to win.
If you look at the map of Kentucky now with the House districts the way they are or just got elected, there's even probably still some losses that the Democrats can face in future elections. There are some regions where there are probably more Republicans than Democrats, where Democrats still hold seats. And I mean, it looks bleak for the Democrats, and it'll be interesting to see if they can find a point to rally around and find a way to get back into power.
This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. We want to thank the callers who've been holding on the line, and we also invite you to get on the line if you have a question, a comment about this election. 800-621-8890, WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com. Send a tweet at WEKU EST. Am I correct? We get a break for a couple of years? No major election next year?
That's correct.
All right. Let's go to the line and talk to Christian from Lexington. Christian, thank you for holding on. Go right ahead.
Yeah, thank you, John. Question for you and your panelists. Heroin abuse and hillbilly heroin abuse is a horrific epidemic. Neighbors are ER doctors, and they say that 75% of all ER visits are heroin or hillbilly heroin related, whether it's some sort of seizure or heart issues or malnutrition with the kids. And, you know, Kentucky, you know, we're just pussyfooting around the problem and any possible solutions. I mean, why aren't we calling in the National Guard? And, you know, if you're dealing heroin, you know, you get to spend 10 years planting trees. You know, when are we going to talk about this problem, meet it head on, and solve it?
Good question to pose to the Republicans who will be controlling a state government, our reporters, and any signs that there is going to be any renewed activity in this area in the General Assembly?
Well, this is one of the issues on which I think there is bipartisan support. There's some debate on some of the details, but I think you're going to see significant legislation along those lines, both in the penal code and in terms of treatment as well.
And it's something that I don't know that anybody has a clear solution to. It's kind of, it's a really hard to wrap your brain around, and it's really hard to really try and prevent and stop. So it'll be interesting to see what approaches they take and how those approaches work.
It's Eastern Standard. We are here for another 20 minutes or so. And on this Thursday, we are live inviting your questions, your comments, your observations about election 2016. 800-621-8890. We certainly have a line open for you. 800-621-8890. Send an email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com, or send a tweet at WEKUEST. You can anytime post on our website or the Facebook page. 800-621-8890. It's Eastern Standard on WEKU. I'm John Hingsbergen. It's a reporters' roundtable, a post-election roundtable, with Dan DeRocher, political reporter for the Lexington Herald Leader, Ronnie Ellis, Capitol Bureau correspondent for CNHI News, including the Richmond Register, Ryland Barton, Capitol Bureau chief for Kentucky Public Radio. Your questions, your comments, your observations following this election. Probably our last conversation about the election on the Eastern Standard for a while, although we will be talking, and we've done this the last couple of years, we'll be talking about going over to Frankfurt during the General Assembly and getting the Senate president. We expect the Senate President Stivers to still be the president of the Senate, I guess. And we're expecting Jeff Hoover to be the Speaker of the Kentucky House. And we'll do our best to get over there and do a show as we've done the last couple of years. Let's go back to the phone and talk to Stanley from Harlan. Stanley, thank you for calling. Go right ahead.
Yes, this is Stanley Sturgill in Harlan County. I'm a retired coal miner, and the federal coal mine inspector. And I was just wondering, actually I have a couple of questions. When do you think, after all these elections, appointees and things shake out, how long do you think it will be when President-elect Trump, Mitch McConnell, Rand Paul, and, you know, right on down, once these Republicans have gotten in, they have promised us that, you know, we will see the light at the end of the tunnel. Wonder when all these thousands and thousands of coal mining jobs will be reestablished, and how long you think it will take, and do you think it will even happen? And also, from what I can understand, President-elect Trump has stated that he will end a lot of these regulations, which I assume will probably be a lot of the EPA regulations, and also the federal 1977 Coal Mine Act. You know, they go on the basis, and they've all made statements that mine safety really puts a pinch on the coal operators' profits. And I, for one, am 100% in protecting our coal miners. And do you think that they will gouge into the Mine Act and try to destroy it?
Stanley, good questions you're posing here, assuming that you did not support the president-elect on the ballot on Tuesday.
No, I did not.
Hello, Stanley. It's Ronnie Ellis. How are you?
I'm good. How about you, Ron?
I'm pretty good. We know each other. Worked on some stories before. You know, I think you're right in one aspect. The Republicans will now own this. And I think they were going to find it a little more difficult to deliver than they found it to blame the other side. The environmental regulations have been a part of the decline of the coal industry, but it probably hasn't been the primary thing. The market conditions and forces will continue. The depletion of the easily mined coal in eastern Kentucky is not going to change a lot. There are things that a president can do by executive order, and I expect President Trump to move on those with the full support, obviously, of Mitch McConnell. But I also expect that groups like some you're associated with will fight those moves in federal court. So there's going to be a change in attitude. Whatever changes on the ground is probably going to take more time than people are expecting in eastern Kentucky.
This is one of the issues that I'm most fascinated with, because it's time to kind of put the rhetoric that the Republicans have been using for a really long time to the test. They've kept saying that this is Obama's war on coal. And so now we're going to see if easing up on some of those regulations actually does bring some of these jobs back and does do something for Appalachia.
Yeah, yesterday, Senator McConnell called on Trump to rescind President Obama's to rescind the Clean Power Plan on day one. I think that was also one of several day one promises that President-elect Trump made over the course of the campaign. And yeah, I mean, as Ronnie said, it's, you know, this is the problems in the coal industry and in eastern Kentucky are, you know, it's a many-legged stool. The top of the list probably really is the cheapness of natural gas in the country. You know, coal just isn't the cheapest form of energy right now. It has had a slight uptick lately. And other than that, as Ronnie also mentioned, kind of the easy-to-get coal in eastern Kentucky is, for the most part, gone.
And those economic factors are not something that the president or legislators are going to be able to do much about.
Yeah, there's another factor here that people overlooked. Our electrical generating fleet is pretty old, and we've been retiring plants. Now, whether you blame that on the federal administration or the market or whatever, those utilities have been looking at the future, and they've been building gas generators instead of coal. So even if the regulatory atmosphere is loosened up, there's not as much demand for coal as there used to be.
This is Eastern Standard on WEKU. Thank you, Stanley, for your call at 800-621-8890. We do have a line open if you'd like to get on board, 800-621-8890, talking about Tuesday's election. Before we go back to our listeners, our reporters around the table, Ryland Barton, Dan DeRocher, and Ronnie Ellis, a lot of folks during the presidential election campaign, Republicans tended to run away from Donald Trump or to not align themselves with Donald Trump. I think of actually the 81st District, the candidate who defeated Rita Smart actually embraced Trump, going to make Kentucky great again, I believe, was something similar in terms of a campaign slogan. Am I correct? That's all changed. Everyone's coming in line now. Republicans, and that includes on the state level, are now going to back President Trump. Are we going to see any indications of Republicans who were outspoken against the Trump candidacy continue with their criticisms?
I think for the most part, yeah, right now everybody's a pretty big happy family in the Republican Party. I think you're correct in characterizing that a lot of Republicans were pretty quiet on Trump over the course of the campaign. Just I think that part of it is just he was so different day to day. You didn't really know if there was going to be a controversy and didn't want your name to be you wanted to be sandbagged by him. But now that he's won, I mean, the thing is everything's kind of all the stars are aligning a little bit, at least from the perspective of Kentucky, looking all the way up the ladder to the White House. I think that once again, we'll wait and see. We'll wait and see what kind of proposals Trump makes once he's in the White House, whether he follows through on some of the kind of more controversial policies or grandiose policies like building the wall along the southern border, making some sort of restrictions on immigration from countries with Islamic connections in some way, and because that's going to be something that starts ruffling feathers down the chain in Congress and back all the way on down the line. So right now and probably for the next month or two before he gets into the White House, Republicans seem to be pretty united right now. But, once kind of rubber hits the road, I think that's when, because once again, we don't really know what a Trump presidency is going to look like. He's had so many different policy proposals. It's just kind of hard, and very few of them being very specific. It's just kind of hard to really know how people are going to react to it at this point.
Well, it may be as important as to how Trump reacts to those people as how they react to Trump. We don't know. Ryland's exactly right. We don't know what a presidency from Donald Trump's going to look like. We can only speculate. There are already articles out there, however, about some of his inner circle listing the people that they want to repay for the lack of support. There are going to be some issues that are going to divide Republicans. Trade, for instance, NATO, things like that. Some of his foreign policy statements, I can't see Senator McConnell going along with, or Senator McCain, or a lot of the Republican establishment. And I think the first indication will be how do he and Paul Ryan get along? Given the there is a minority within the Republican majority in the House, called the Freedom Caucus, usually, that is far to the right of everybody else. They may feel emboldened if Trump is not happy with Ryan and they want somebody else. We could see some real interesting internecine battles in the party.
Will there be any change in terms of Kentucky's influence on the national scene? Of course, Mitch McConnell will retain his role as head of the Senate, which could have gone the other way. There were lots of possibility and projections going forward in the election. Hal Rogers and his very strong influence on the U.S. House. Is that all pretty solid as a result of the Trump election?
That's really solid. Mitch McConnell will have a lot of power. He'll be able to kind of determine what's seen and what's not seen. His priorities kind of take place over Trump's priorities because he controls the Senate and he gets to see which bills are actually heard. The other thing that'll be interesting is Governor Bevin is friends with Mike Pence. And Mike Pence is the new vice president. So he's probably going to have an ear in the White House. And that'll be really interesting to kind of see if that means that Bevin wields any influence or anything like that.
Let's go back to the phone and talk to Dylan from Lexington. Thank you for calling. And we will mention we may have time for one or two additional callers if you'd like to get on the line at 800-621-8890. Dylan, go right ahead.
Hi. I have one brief question. During the Senate discussions between Rand Paul and Jim Gray, I noticed they discussed their policies quite regularly. And my question is for your little gathering there. Do you guys honestly believe that these candidates are taking into consideration the desires, the needs, and the opinions of the Kentucky people as a whole, or are they taking their own personal stance?
I think that's a very good question that gets to the root of why people run for office and how they figure out what issues they're going to run on. I mean, I think that it's a slow moving process to really candidates are always, and politicians are always, trying to listen to their constituents and figure out what policies are popular, what policies that they will be able to take into the Senate. In the case of Mayor Gray and Senator Paul, and I mean, I think that with Senator Paul, the big issue on government surveillance, reducing the federal debt, those are issues that are popular within his coalition. It's stuff that he's running on and trying to continue running on. I think that sometimes it's frustrating when there's when issues pop up and it feels like the candidates aren't addressing them, but I think there's extreme pressure to once again not be not have a whiplash response. I think that's sometimes what happens, because they're not sure, say, how popular a particular issue is within their base.
And I understand the difference between the bipartisan system and the different issues that are more focused on in each. But I think that taking into consideration the opposition, if you will, their platform is very important, because there, every state, but Kentucky as well, it's a very diverse state with a lot of different opinions.
Well, yeah, I guess to that point, there is not so much pressure to bring in parts of their opposition's platform. I mean, at least with the case of the Gray Paul race, there wasn't really a point in which I think that Paul was very scared that Jim Gray was going to win that race. Then again, I think another way of looking at it is on the national level. I don't think we saw either candidate really trying to peel off voters from the other side. They pretty much doubled down on their policies and on their people, and that's kind of why we had such a divisive election. I think that with the Senate race, though, you can really attribute it to I don't think Senator Paul was ever very scared and felt the urge to really have to take up some of Mayor Gray's issues.
Well, I think there's another aspect to answering your question. I think both of these Senate candidates were eager to talk about issues that were important to them. They're both very articulate and both thoughtful. But I think the successful candidates are the ones who tap into the mood of the electorate as opposed to individual issues. Here's a perfect example. Senator Paul knows, as well as you and I know, that you could eliminate the foreign aid budget, you could take it to zero, and it would have essentially no impact on the deficit because it's so small. But he understands what that means to the mood of the voters who believe that we spend too much attention overseas and not enough taking care of a great swath of our society that feels forgotten. So, I think the Republicans have been better at that, and I think Senator Paul is very good at that.
Let's see if we can get Nancy on the air for just a minute, and we'll give Dan DeRocher the first crack at responding to Nancy. Nancy, thanks for calling. We're short on time. Go ahead, please.
Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to speak to Trump's reputation and subsequently our country's reputation internationally. I had a poignant but productive conversation with my cousin from Finland and some of her friends online this morning. My Finnish is not good, but some of it was in English also. And basically, one of the things that, I'm sorry, a little nervous, that really expressed most of the sentiment was, you know, that today the first black president is going to be discussing turning over his power to a man who has been endorsed by the KKK. And I understand that Donald Trump has rebuked the KKK somewhat, but clearly that rebuke has not been heard loudly by the rest of the world.
Nancy, thank you. Thank you for that observation. We do need to move on because we're just about out of time, and we'll let Dan DeRosier respond to your comment or anything else you want to jump in on here.
I think you're hitting a really hot button issue right now for the whole country. Donald Trump lost the popular vote, but he won the Electoral College, and he's going to have to unite people, and he's going to have to prove to people that some of the rhetoric that he used during the campaign isn't really who he is, and that he's going to be a president for all Americans and not just for the people who elected him.
Going forward, the General Assembly, again, what can we look for in January? Anything? This is not a budget year, is it?
No, but I think once we are into the meat of the session, and I don't know specifically each issue, but I think you will see quick action by Republicans to move on some aspect of their agenda to prove that they are the governing coalition.
Thank you to Ronnie Ellis of CNHI News. Thank you to Dan DeRosier of the Lexington Herald Leader. Thank you, Ryland Barton, for being with us. As always, we'll get you guys back together here as a Reporters Roundtable on the Eastern Standard. Our program is a production of WEKU at Eastern Kentucky University. Our producers for the show are Grant Willoughby, Brian Burkhart, Marissa Hempel, and Brian Bartlett is at the controls. I'm John Hingsbergen, inviting you to visit our website at weku.fm, and you can find archived audio of our programs and information. You can comment on conversations we've had on this show as well as news stories. You'll find a podcast and audio online to listen to very soon this afternoon, as we do every week, and the show repeating on Sunday evening at 6 o'clock. Please write to us at any time. Send us a tweet at WEKUEST or write to us by email, WEKUEasternstandard@gmail.com. I'm John Hingsbergen. Thanks for tuning in.